Blog Talk Radio.
Let's start the show.
I believe in you.
Yeah.
And know the door.
You're tuned in to NSF Radio.
You may keep it
with your host, Ben Alfred, and Carl.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're doing it again. Brother Koopy is in the house. So everybody, stay tuned in. What's going on, Brother Koopy?
I'm doing good, sir. How you doing?
All right, man. But listen, man, we got a great show for you today. Well, you know, as we know right now, Joe Biden has picked a running mate. Okay, and it is the first black Indian Asian representative on a mainstream ticket, and it's the hottest topic right now. So what we're going to do, we are going to dig into politics. But we're going to look at it from a father's standpoint and the children's standpoint. What is the effect, the mental effect of having children as a politician? What does that do to the child's mentality over its lifespan? And how much effect does it do? I mean, is the child really making his own choices, or is it because what it's been exposed to has set its life into motion permanently, and the child thinking it's making its own avenues, but really it only looks at what it thinks is limited to accessing. Okay? We can look at the Bushes. We can look at many sources of children in this part. So we have to be, you know, ready, willing, and able. You know, as children want their father and their parents' praise. So they do things, you know, not out of nature, really. It's more of I'm doing it to impress the certain parent. And because that parent might be involved into it, it's sort of like you heard the old saying, I want to spend time with my child and show that I'm interested in my child's life. Look at the word I just said. Interest in my child's life. So I mean, the child has a certain interest. Let's say your son plays baseball. So you take interest in your child's baseball career and you sponsor him, you support him, you go to the games. You do these certain things and aspects. And during that time, you know, we're trying to not just smile, make a father or parent smile, or the father's trying to make the child smile. But you're showing support for each other on, I guess you could say, somewhat of an equal level, but it's not really there. We're going to play some tracks today. We're going to get into some of the music. We're going to get into some of the aspect of this so-called fatherhood. So let's get into it a little bit. Let's just start a little something. And get in. Y'all approve? Thank you. Okay, then let's get going. All right. I have the first clip we hear. We're going to go backwards and bring it forward. okay? This is George Bush, Jr., which was President Bush, after his father. Now, I want you to hear how he talks and responds to about when he talks about his father at the eulogy.
Last Friday, when I was told he had minutes to live, I called him. The guy answered the phone, said I think he can hear you, but he hadn't said anything for most of the day. I said, Dad, I love you, and you've been a wonderful father. And the last words he would ever say on earth were, I love you too. To us, he was close to perfect, but not totally perfect. His short game was lousy. He wasn't exactly Fred Astaire on the dance floor. The man couldn't stomach vegetables, especially broccoli. And by the way, he passed these genetic defects along to us. Finally, every day of his 73 years of marriage, Dad taught us all what it means to be a great husband. He married his sweetheart. He adored her. He laughed and cried with her. He was dedicated to her totally. In his old age, Dad enjoyed watching police show reruns. The volume on high. All the while holding Mom's hand. After Mom died, Dad was strong, but all he really wanted to do was hold Mom's hand again. Of course, Dad taught me another special lesson. He showed me what it means to be a president who serves with integrity, leads with courage, and acts with love in his heart for the citizens of our country. When the history books are written, they will say that George H.W. Bush was a great president of the United States, a diplomat of unmatched skill, a commander-in-chief of formidable accomplishment, and a gentleman who executed the duties of his office with dignity and honor. In his inaugural address, the 41st president of the United States said this, "We cannot hope only to leave our children a bigger car, a bigger bank account. We must hope to give them a sense of what it means to be a loyal friend, a loving parent, a citizen who leaves his home, his neighborhood, and town better than he found it. What do we want the men and women who work with us to say when we are no longer there? That we were more driven to succeed than anyone around us, or that we stopped to ask if a sick child had gotten better and stayed a moment there to trade a word of friendship. Well, Dad, we're going to remember you for exactly that and much more. And we're going to miss you. Your decency, sincerity, and kind soul will stay with us forever. So through our tears, let us know the blessings of knowing and loving you, a great and noble man, the best father a son or daughter could have. And in our grief, let us smile knowing that Dad is hugging Robin and holding Mom's hand again."
Hey, NBC News viewers.
Okay, so, all right, now let's dig into this. Now, Koopy, I'm going to let you shoot off first what you hear about what kind of message you kind of hear from George Bush. How would it affect him as he became president after his father? How do you see, what do you kind of hear when, if you look at it from a son's perspective, what do you hear George Bush Jr. talk about senior, and how do you feel? What kind of emotions do you feel from what he's saying about his father?
Well, somebody who's lost a parent, you definitely feel that he, of course, wasn't happy about the fact that he lost his father. He talks about how he looks up to him, and really, that's something that goes even beyond politics. If you know, if you have a parent and that parent has been involved in your life, even if you feel that parent has done some egregious things or you feel that parent has been perfect, you love your parent. You learn from them. And, of course, he talks about things that he picked up politically. And, you know, even if you look at what George Bush, you know, George W. Bush picked up from George H. Bush, his father, you'll see that W. made it a point to pick even people on his cabinet, some of which were even in his father's cabinet, most noticeably, well, not necessarily his father's cabinet, but most noticeably Colin Powell was somebody who was a huge, you know, a huge person when it came to George Bush and Iraq, and later on we would see the same person be brought back. You know, we would see,
right.
we would see, you know, you would see certain things that were there. You would see how, even not just George Bush. I know George Bush was the one. George W. Bush was the one talking, but you know, what about Jeb Bush and some of the things that he has said and done as well? Look at whatever the father is, the sons are as well. You know, their family is connected. I'm sorry?
Mm. Yeah, dig into that.
Yeah.
We forgot about brother in Florida. Yeah, cool. Bro, bring that in. Let's talk about that. I mean, look at the policies, the procedures, everything that the I consider saying the outside son, because one got praised over the other. Even if you watch the movie about the history of the Bushes and you look at the way Jed was treated and looked upon against George, it was like they weren't like average brothers and sisters. I heard, and what I've seen is that, you know, father senior would sit there, praise what Jed is doing in Florida, and George was smoking pot and trying to do draft dodging and military problems in the Air Force next up. So, yeah, bro, we need to talk about that. Bring that up.
Right. So you're dealing with, you know, so you've got a lot of stuff. That's why even George W. Bush goes in and you see the two, basically, people forget that even though George W. Bush ends up winning, it was never George H. Bush's will that George W. Bush would become president. He wanted Jeb Bush to become president. That was the one who they were grooming. And so everything that Jeb Bush ever stood for was something that George H. Bush had put in him since he was of early age. And, you know, even if you look at the background of even their mother and different things that, you know, came into through marriage and stuff like that, there's a lot of details that we don't think about. And we oftentimes don't study because we forget that, you know, presidents in and of themselves, they're all chosen anyways. And so we're given a background about the president. You know, we think that Michelle and Barack, or we think that Barbara and George, or we think that Ronald, and I can't remember his wife's name, forgive me, but we think that, you know, Lincoln and Mary Todd, we think that all these people just randomly came into being with each other, but these are all people and things that are chosen. And so Jeb was supposed to be the chosen one, and George ended up being chosen by others that they wanted him to be there, and really because he could be controlled a lot easier. We oftentimes give presidents credit for a lot of things. Presidents don't create law. You know, presidents don't, you know, that's Congress. Presidents can make decisions when we go to war, but presidents have to have permission to go to war. Presidents do make decisions and they pass laws and bills, but when those laws and bills are passed, they're passed due to the fact that people who paid for them to get in, the lobbyists, who paid hundreds of billions of dollars sometimes to be able to make sure that they get in as president, they expect a return on their investment. So when George W. Bush starts pushing something for the Republicans to do while they're in Congress, he's doing so because the people that have paid him have said, you're going to make sure this happens, and they even have law to where they have to be in Congress. So George W. Bush was the one that was chosen, although Jeb, if George H. Bush had his choice, Jeb would have been the one to have been chosen. And so all of those laws that you see are things that George H. Bush approves of, all those things that are happening in Florida, even to this day, as backlash to, or not backlash, but even just the normal consequences of a lot of those laws, they come from George H. Bush. The way that the children are out even today in COVID and stuff like that, it comes from the relationship of fathers to sons. Let's not even forget, by the way, we always talk about Ronald Reagan with Reaganomics and how he had the Iran-Contra deal and all that stuff. We forget, mm-hmm. and then how he was selling cracks and cocaine into the community. We forget that not only was Ronald Reagan about to lose his job before Oliver North and others basically saved his behind by taking the brunt of it so they could get paid off later and get cushy jobs later, but also George H. Bush, who was the vice president, he was about to lose his job too. He was implemented in it too. So everything that Ronald Reagan was doing, George H. Bush just basically tried to extend it into his presidency. And he actually got a lot of flack. The reason they didn't want him to run again for president was because everything that he was being blamed for, he was being blamed for everything that basically Ronald Reagan had already put into place and he had co-signed. And so he got the raps for it, but that was stuff that him and Reagan were doing together. So him and Reagan were all into breaking up the black community. They hand off into the Clintons, by the way, and look at what happens with the Clintons when they sign that bill. You know, we're basically in 94, all these black brothers and sisters are in jail, and some of them still to this day are in jail. Some of them serving life sentences because they had a bag of weed. Like, those are things come from, hey, we're going to flood your community with crack cocaine, then we're going to lock you up because you're the problem, even though we're the people that made your community that way. And so there's a lot of stuff that goes in there. But when we talk about if George H. Bush is capable of that, if he's capable of going into Iraq, if he's capable of going into Kuwait, if he's capable of making sure America stays there and never leaves, then, of course, it's easy to see how did the son, George W. Bush, go into Iraq, lie about weapons of mass destruction, lie so bad that Colin Powell even leaves him and doesn't want to be part of his cabinet when Bush has his second term. If we see that the father did these things, then how easy is it to see the son did these things? And by the way, let's be honest too, if the son is out there not just smoking weed, but we know he was out there doing cocaine, right? Like if he's out there doing cocaine and things like that, what kind of background, what kind of stuff is that family allowing him to do? He was going to be the son that was partying and doing this and that, and again, eventually some powers that be, they want him to become president, and so then he becomes president. But, you know, like you said, that wasn't his first choice. That wasn't George H. Bush's first choice. It was for Jeb. They were grooming him, and everything that Jeb stood for, that's what he got from his father. So I know we got this beautiful, description from his son.
Family legacy.
His son should feel like that about his father, right? So I know we got a beautiful description about the father from the son, who should feel like that about his father. However, if you just look at what his sons have done and what they've said and the things that they've caused in America, they got it from somewhere. And they were groomed to a certain extent, even the one that they didn't like. They were groomed to a certain extent to have to marry who they were told, to have to say what they were told, to have to make sure they were the ultimate Republicans and Republican values. And what did Republican values mean? Well, we just look at their policies.
Right.
And when we look at their policies, we see what their father believed.
Listen, you know, since we talk about Reagan, since we're talking about Bush, we also got to remember that Iran convert that also was involved with, I believe, Ali, you know, was invented, was put in front of the House to speak about that controversy. And it ruined his career to the point that, you know, he's not even in politics. He's not in military. He's not even shown on TV anymore. He just basically wasted away for a while. You know, there was a recent picture, an article on him, I believe it was 2 to 3 years ago, that I was reading. And he's living in some kind of log cabin sort of lifestyle, away from society, away from the press. He's not very much involved as he used to be. They ruined his career. It just ruined him. That big old controversy ruined him. Now, we look at, the aspect of familyhood, everyone that has family, most of the times when you are a politician, the number one thing they used to tell you back in the day, and you even see movies talk about, bring it up, is family, kissing babies, and having family values, good family values. So if you're a politician, I guarantee you there is a lower percentage of single, unmarried politicians than there is higher ranking politicians with families. In every conversation you will listen to, whether it's on YouTube, Snapchat, wherever politicians are using platforms, they will use their family in the language to get their point across. If you have not looked at that, there's a reason for that. Because to relate to the common man and people, most of them have families or family dynamic. So if I can't relate that message of what I am trying to shoot for, then I'm not going to get my platform across. And if I'm not able to get my platform across, you go and see how many votes you're going to get. Am I right or wrong? Huh? So we got to look at that. It might be a little bit shocking. It might be a little crazy. But hey, bro, it's there. And, you know, I mean, we talking about it. Now let's bring it up a little bit further. Okay? We're going to talk about the mentality effect on the child. Now, this is a clip I got. Basically, I'm sitting there reading about, you know, Barack Obama and Joe Biden, but I want to get you hear the commentary from today's show, from the Today Show with Al Roker and Laura Bush's daughter. She's on today's show, and they were talking about when Barack Obama was being, you know, last speech, how Malia started breaking down crying. And the description they gave was so moving. And you can see a positive vibe, the fact that that child, she will have in her life. So if there's a man come around, trust me, there's going to be a higher standard there going to be, an elegance, you know. Some might use the term bourgeoisie sort of attitude, but it's put in place because they are known, the Obamas are known for that family dynamic. President Barack Obama used, you know, put his family first. He did his job as a politician and as a father to the nation, you may say. But his influence on his children, his personal life, the love of his family, and how the dynamic is balanced. And when so many others are unbalanced, I want you to just listen. Just listen to the clip. I think you'll get the message.
Did make it home in time,
yes,
to see President Obama's farewell speech.
Yes, mm-hmm. We did, which was so, especially toward the end, so very emotional, especially when he was thanking his wife, Mrs. Obama, Michelle Obama. Take a look.
Michelle LaVon Robinson, girl of the South Side. For the past 25 years, you have not only been my wife and mother of my children, you have been my best friend. And a new generation sets its sights higher because it has you as a role model. So you have made me proud, and you have made the country proud.
I also got so emotional when he was thanking his daughters, saying, of all the things that I've done in my life, I'm most proud to be your dad. You saw Malia there. tearing up. But of course, trending.
Yeah.
Yes, the hashtag. Where's Sasha?
I thought the same thing. The family came out at the end. It was just this beautiful shot, and you don't see Sasha.
Right.
So it's trending. And, of course, I started Googling, like, where is Sasha? Well, Sasha was back in D.C. because she had an exam the next morning. So apparently your father's last speech as president after two
but
terms.
But you know what?
You couldn't miss school.
This is why we're going to miss this family.
Yeah.
Depending on, you know, politics aside, I'm so tired of everybody having different views. But we will miss this family because they put their family first.
Yeah.
And what you do when you have little kids is, you know, they have to stay home for the test.
But that was a huge debate, though. I'm going to move back because I'm not the parent. There was a debate in our meeting on when you take your child out of school. There were some who said, listen, for a good trip to Disney, it's worth taking the child out. What say you, Mr. Roker?
You know, listen, I never, obviously, being the I will never be the president of the United States.
Now, Al,
you don't know that. You don't know that.
You never know.
You know how many times that was said over the last 2 years?
You never know.
There are very few things that I am certain of in life. That is one of them.
Let's get on today's take and let's ask Al Roker to run.
In any event, I would think if your father is giving his farewell address, I think you might be able to get
a
make good on the test.
I think
You know what?
Okay.
That's
what
their choice.
But you know what else?
God bless
him. Malia, watching Malia tear up. I was watching with Henry, and you know, again, politics aside, Henry just with two, we have two little kids, two little girls, and he just, I looked over, and my 6'4 husband was tearing up because every dad can feel the way that he did, and every daughter who's proud of their father can see themselves in Malia Obama.
What was it like for you the last time your dad had to give a speech? Because I've always wondered, what is that like?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, at his library opening, I remember sitting there with Barbara just weeping, weeping, because we don't see a politician. She doesn't see a politician standing up there.
Sure.
She sees her dear dad, who has always put her first, and she knows that, and we knew that. And so there's just a pride that comes. I think any daughter feels this way. I know that Leela would feel that with you, of a dad that has shown their daughter unconditional love.
Yeah. And I mean, look at you and Leela. Here she's getting ready for this huge venture in her life. And I always tell Al, I became, you know, just a fan of Leela. She was a little girl. We were in London.
Mm-hmm.
I remember how young she was?
Yeah.
And I saw this kid. She had braces on, and we ran into each other in the lobby. And I became, like, low-key obsessed with her and watching her grow. And then I saw her just, 2 years later, and I'm like, Al,
I know.
Look at her. And then in the Golden Globe dress, he posted a picture of her at the Golden Globe.
Mm-hmm.
I think I sent it out to everyone as if it were my child. I'm like, and here's my daughter, Leela. I mean, just to watch the Sasha and Malia grow into these beautiful women.
We watch that.
The same as we're watching with Leela, and to your point, it's family.
Mm-hmm.
It's family. It's not politics, it's family.
Hello, Today fans. Thanks for checking out our YouTube channel.
So, I guess just a little clip. We just wanted to let you get into the scene where we're talking about. Now, you know, we always, you know, remember, you know, one thing we want to say at NSF, we know we're not really into the politics side, but we are focused on very broadband of dynamics when it comes to this thing, fatherhood, or familyhood, or orientations of family values. So let's get into this part. You heard Al Roker, what he stated, and you heard what Mrs. Bush said on there as well. So we have to understand, Obama came into office, and during his terms, he always put his children first. And everybody saw that. She did not have to subjugate herself or degrade herself or get into her father's field of interest. Because she has, that daughter has, you know, they have no intent or they don't have any desire that they're not showing to us right now on the public platforms that they want to get into politics. So what they're doing is they are opening a new way, a path. Now, I want to, you know, before we get into this part a little deeper, I want you to see, okay, this is what a free thinker, somebody who is broadening their family's dynamic, not narrowing Now, we going to talk to a certain president, inspiration, dealing with I'm gonna let this talk for you. You know the voices, won't you? Yeah. I'm sorry. I just gotta laugh because it's a little bit.
When your name is Donald Trump Jr., it is pretty hard to escape your father's shadow.
You know, introduce myself as just Don, or sometimes I'd avoid the last name at all costs. You didn't want to have to deal with everyone making those assumptions.
It wasn't until his father's presidential campaign that he emerged as a full-throated Trump.
You can't give a Trump a mic and not expect us to take our turn.
Donald Trump Jr. is very similar to his dad.
That's Kevin Cirilli, chief Washington correspondent for Bloomberg Television.
Both are ambitious, driven, and not afraid to pick a fight, even if it will lead to controversy and scandal.
She deserves everything that's coming to her.
Now the spotlight has turned on Donald Trump Jr. As his meeting with a Russian who promised damaging information about his father's political rival, Hillary Clinton, raises serious questions.
If a foreign government offers to aid your campaign, the answer is no.
I think anyone, even if they were a rookie, would realize that was inappropriate.
This is how Donald Trump Jr. went from prodigal son to company man to political lightning rod. Donald Trump Jr. was born on New Year's Eve, 1977, to then real estate mogul Donald Trump and his wife Ivana, a former model and skiing prodigy from Czechoslovakia. Donnie, as he was then called, grew up in Trump Tower's 53-room penthouse, surrounded by nannies and bodyguards.
Donald Trump Sr. has said that he was going to be a much more engaged father with his children once they were adults.
Don Jr. spent summers with his grandfather Miloš in Czechoslovakia learning hunting and fishing. There he developed a love for the outdoors that would follow him throughout his life. At the age of 12, his parents had a very messy public divorce. Blaming his father, Don Jr. did not speak to him for over a year. To insulate him from unwanted attention, Ivana sent Don Jr. off to boarding school. While refusing to attend his father's wedding to Marlo Maples, Don Jr. still labored on his father's construction sites for minimum wage and attended his alma mater, the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School, earning a degree in finance and real estate.
After college, he took some time for himself. He went to Colorado. He worked at a ski resort, and he was someone who didn't immediately go into the family business.
In 2001, Donald Trump Jr. changed his tune. He reported for work at the Trump Organization in the same building he grew up. Don Jr. eventually rose to executive vice president, joining his father in the real boardroom and the fictional one, appearing alongside him on The Apprentice.
Who would you rather see continue on with you?
Ooh, Don Jr.
That's a very good question.
I am officially running for President of the United States.
Along with his siblings Ivanka and Eric, Donald Trump Jr. was a key part of the campaign from day one.
If Hillary Clinton were elected, she'd be the first president who couldn't pass a basic background check.
Unlike Jared Kushner and Ivanka, and you could even say Trump himself, Don Jr.'s ideologies align a lot more with the conservative base.
That's Shannon Pettypiece.
I'm a White House reporter with Bloomberg News. He is incredibly popular with the Trump base. He speaks their language. He's a big sportsman, gun advocate.
Which has landed him in hot water at times.
The Trump sons became targets themselves earlier this year after photographs of their big game kill surfaced online.
Just like his father.
He's not a politician. He's not politically correct. And he's gotten criticism for it.
And he is.
Okay, I can't listen to him anymore. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You know what I mean? It's a little bit, you know, it's just a little bit, you know, it's funny if you look at it, but that's where that. So, all right, Kubi, let's get into this part. We have two aspects, diasporas of aspects here. We have George Bush, who looked up to father, tried to get his father's attention, did that part. We have Obama,
where their children aspect was not really affected. They were allowed to free think and be more their own independent thinkers and take their own way of thinking. Then you got the Trumps. Okay. You got the Trumps. I know we each got our own lot of views on this. Brother, please help me out. You got it. All right.
Well, I mean,
let's get into
it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, bro.
No, I mean, I really don't have much to say. I mean, Donald Trump is somebody, you know, well, it's very, to me, it's a cautionary tale of fatherhood. A lot of fathers think because they have money or because they can provide, and that should be enough. Donald Trump is somebody where we see that the human being is a big piece of it. You know, he's had, what, five? I think Ivanka's number five, right? Five wives. He's had many concubines.
Yeah.
He's had many girls on the side, a whole bunch of side pieces, messing with prostitutes, babies out of wedlock, all these different things. And it gets to be a point to where if you're not careful, you know, you miss these things. You know, if you're not careful, those things that happen, they cause a lot of issues, a lot of problems. They cause a lot of things with your family members. He's got a daughter. The youngest daughter is kind of thought of as a throwaway. Nobody really gives her much attention. You've got a son who we just heard about who couldn't stand his own father. And, you know, at the end of the day, once again, even if your father is not who you want him to be, you're still going to have some type of love for him. And him and his mother get a divorce. He blames the father. Which come to find out he was right to blame the father, but that's a whole other rabbit hole, but he blames the father. Then you say, okay, well, he blames the father. He's not talking to him. He when he's being raised, his father kept saying, I'm going to have a relationship with him once he gets older, which makes zero sense because the best time to even cement your relationship is when they get younger or when they are younger. You know, but it's a very cautionary tale. Just because you make money, just because you're considered to be cream of the crop, just because you're the president, you can be the president of the United States or the president of your own company or the president of NSF radio station or whatever your position is. And if we're not careful, we can still be doing things that are detrimental to our children. And as far as from a fatherhood perspective, that's something that, you know, is very easy to see.
Yeah, but let's talk about the switch. You notice how in the clip, okay, he hated his father, and then suddenly, 2001, he missed daddy. So he wanted that father's attention. So something around there, he might have, I don't know, if he walked around a park and saw a dad and a son doing something together or some millionaire family doing tag team, you know, swimming in money, I don't know. But I do know this. You hated your father, the way your father thinks, the whole way of him living. You come from your grandparents or out there. You're living out there. And then now you're coming back to the States. You get involved. Now you want to suddenly be teen dad. You get involved. You climb up the ladder because you want to get your father's attention. Just get real to it. He wanted his father's attention and approval so bad. So he molded his attitude, his ideas, and his way of thinking to think like his father. So the term, just like father and just like son, or father like son, is definitely in effect with this kind of subject. You know, it's strange. But you think about free thinking versus, you know, hybrid construct thinking. Okay? We look at construct. We're going to look at it as a construct thinking basis. Because look at it, you know, free thinkers like Obama's children, it's the effect and is there, but it's not in the way that they formulate everything around. I do what daddy do, I do what my parents do, and I do like they do. Them children don't allow the aspect. But you think of Trump Jr.? You think about what he's doing and the daughter? They're doing this all to support. If Dad says the clouds are red, they will say red. A free thinker minder, a clear thinker with no weight on pressure, of feeling pressure, psychologically, will bring a different construct or a new way of thinking on the horizon. We have to look at these things. So when we build in ourselves up in our own communities, within our own aspect, you know, and, you know, and just to prove, well, you know, we all know about Joe Biden's son that passed away and how it affected him. But here's a clip of his other son defending his dad. And now this, I'm not going to play the whole clip because we're about to get into something really deep real quick and get to the other part.
Now we turn to the vice president's son, Delaware Attorney General Bo Biden. Bo, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be with you this morning, Jake.
Now, I hate to put you in the awkward position of having to defend your father. I know I wouldn't want to have to defend my father as much as I love him. But he is the vice president, and you are here on this show. So I have to start with the criticism of your father's style the other night. Many out there were saying his eye rolls, his laughter, his smiles were too much and overshadowed the substance of what he was saying. The Romney Ryan ticket has a new TV ad. Let's play a clip of that.
Did they come in and inherit a tough situation? Absolutely. But we're going in the wrong direction. Look at where we are. The economy is barely limping along. Don't raise taxes on small businesses because there are job creators.
Smiling and laughing while Congressman Ryan was talking about serious issues. Was his body language at all? Were his facial expressions counterproductive?
Not at all. Look, I'm happy to defend my dad. I don't think he needs any defense in this. Anytime the other side, Karl Rove or the folks on the far right, are going after my father for smiling too much, you know that's a victory. My father spoke clearly to the American people about the facts, and you saw him do that for the 90 minutes straight. You know, this isn't, Jake, about how much my father smiled or how many gallons of water that the congressman drank nervously on that stage. It's about talking directly to the American people about very important facts, and what you saw from my father were him articulating the vision for that the president and he have to continue to build this middle class from the out and take this country forward. And I was struck by Paul Ryan by a number of fronts, you know, especially the congressman's position on Afghanistan, which I feel very strongly about.
I want to get
here
to that.
Had a congressman
Bo, I want
suggesting.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, sure. Well, look, I mean, you had him suggest, if not open the door, to put additional troops in Afghanistan. It was a remarkable position to take.
Wasn't he making the point that pulling troops out of Afghanistan, especially in RC East, Regional Command East, where I've been, isn't it accurate, and your father has been many times, isn't it accurate to say that generals preferred to pull out the troops after the fighting season ended and not during? Wasn't that the larger strategic point he was making?
I'm not sure if he knows what the strategic point he was making was. The point that I heard and the American people heard is that you heard my father clearly articulate that we wouldn't have forces in Afghanistan by 2014, and you seem to hear the congressman equivocate on that. In fact, not be willing to guarantee the American people that we wouldn't have forces in Afghanistan, which will then be the nation's longest war.
Your father raised some eyebrows when he was asked about requests for more security from diplomats on the ground in Libya. Here's what he said.
Well, we weren't told they wanted more security again. We did not know they wanted more security again.
We weren't told. Now, I know the White House now says that when the vice president said we, he meant him and the president, not the Obama administration writ large, because obviously the State Department was told that they wanted more security. But isn't that kind of a cop-out? You're speaking in front of 50 million Americans, and you're saying we weren't told when people in the State Department were in fact told?
Not at all. He was speaking for himself and the president, as you heard Jay Carney tell you in the briefing room just the other day. Look, this is a tragedy when we lose an ambassador with three other personnel, number one. Number two, the president is going to do making sure that we investigate to make sure exactly what happened, putting Tom Pickard in charge of doing just that. Three, the president is going to do exactly what he did with Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda. He's going to find these people and bring them to justice. And third and fourthly, you know, Jake, this is not a moment in time where we should be politicizing these issues. You know, I've served with and know and personal friends who are in the Foreign Service as we speak. And the idea that Romney and Ryan are suggesting that the President of the United States doesn't take seriously the security of our diplomats and Foreign Service officers around the world, I find absolutely outrageous, especially outrageous coming from the congressman who in his budget proposed to cut diplomatic security by $200 to $300 million. It's outrageous. This is not a time, like this is a group of folks that aren't ready for prime time. You have Governor Romney who within 24 hours goes to London, offends our closest ally, walks out in front of 10 Downing Street and tells the International Press Corps that he just met with the British intelligence. These are folks that seem to be more interested in kind of pounding their chest to make the neoconservatives who advise them proud than they are about being serious about foreign policy and protecting our national interests around the world.
All right, Bo Biden, that's all the time we have.
So, okay. So you see, now this is a different aspect. It's sort of, it's like, all right, is a conservative defense and representation for a son to a father, but at the same aspects, because we got to remember what Biden's son's own goals are. He wants to be on the political scene, and he is on the political scene right now, and he has his own aspects, his own views, and his own goals. But he feels, you can feel the emotions, but he's controlling it in way he's defending his father in that interview. And because of that aspect, we have to look at that, you know? But I want to ask everybody, please go to NSF or NSF Fatherhood. Go to NSF Fatherhood. We're on Google. We're on the stream. We're everywhere. We're everywhere. So please look us up. Tune in. Call us 1-800-903-2096. You have a problem. Our hotline is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 360 days a year. So please, you have a problem, call us. Press that zero on the line, and we'll be glad to support you right there to you. But right now, I just wanted to get into the best thing, the only thing that is going to basically push us into the next part of the show. Hey, Koopy, guess what I did, brother?
What's that?
I done did it again. I made another hot one for y'all right now. So we're going to get into. All right. It's another time right now. So everybody, get your cooking pans out if you have not. And we're going to go ahead. Today we are making Alfred's Quarter Pounder Burger. Now, all you're going to need for this is, now you can use beef, lamb, and you're going to need at least 2 to 3 pounds or 5 pounds of beef, depending on how many burgers you are trying to do. You know, weigh the portion, and the grain of meat you're going to need is an 8120. So that's 80% beef, 20% fat, lean cut. You know, try to make sure the fat content is there because you're going to need that to help make the burger good. So what we're going to do is this is what you're going to need. You need some Worcestershire sauce, some white pepper, some turmeric. You're going to need to make sure you got some gloves because you're not going to handle this by hand. You're going to need some onion salt, some mustard, and, of course, finally, you're going to need to be able to have some onion powder and garlic powder. That's an optional one. And you line that up for you. So once you get that, mold the burgers and make them as big as you want. Make sure they're 1/4 pound each. then freeze them immediately. As soon as you make the burgers, freeze them hard. Make sure they're pressed completely round. Get ready to do it. Once it's frozen, then once you get it nice and frozen, then you are ready to take it and start the cooking process. Put a little seasoning on top, your choice, you know, some onions, some peppers, maybe some pickles and mayonnaise, ketchup, whatever you want to decorate it, put it in, and you got Alfred's quarter pound of burger. Well, you know, it's about that time. You know, we're getting close to close down. I think I had a ball today, bro. I don't know how you think about everything today, bro.
As I said when you brought it to me, you know, the subject matter is definitely a cool subject to get into, because we don't think about parents and how they affect children nearly enough, let alone how they do so in politics. So I thought it was a very fun thing to listen to. Also, to listen to some of the people that you put up, I hadn't even heard some of the speeches. So that was, to me, that was very good. I look forward to doing more things like it in the future.
All right. Hey, Goofy, what we got going on is Goofy Speaks this week. What's the subject? What's going on? Tell me.
Well, for everybody that's going to be on, we thank you in advance. First of all, thank you for being on with us today. We're on, I'm thankful for the opportunity on Saturday. Excuse me, for the opportunity on Saturday, to which we'll be doing Kofi Speaks. We'll be having, I think it's episode 5. And I'm not 100% sure what the subject matter is going to be. There's so much stuff going on. We might talk some cryptocurrency. We might talk about investing. We might talk about different things we can do to change the community. What should we invest in? What are we doing as far as land, mortgage, rent, different things like that. But so that's where I'm leaning. But right now I'm not 100% sure. But we do want you to come out and listen in with us. You can always feel free to call in as well and be in the, you know, on the chat. And if you haven't done so already, make sure that you go to nsfatherhood.org. N is in national, S is in saving, nsfatherhood.org. Go on there. Make sure that you scroll down to make sure that you, I'm sorry, actually click on NSF radio stations, then scroll down to Blog Talk Radio, and then sign up so that you can stream and you can listen. We're appreciative of you guys helping us out. We're thankful. And, you know, we've even got now, we've got four programs coming on for you during the week. So things are growing, and I'm excited to be a part of what we're doing and continue to help us out. I want to send a special shout out to those who've been helping and giving us donations to help us to move forward in the walk that we have to help fathers all over the place. And I want to thank Brother Alfred again for being somebody who started this whole thing for us and allowing me to be a part of it.
Well, I appreciate you, brother, and you know, want to definitely give a shout out to you right now and everything you're doing. So thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. So listen, my name is Brother Alfred, and that's Brother Koopy. And listen, you're listening to NSF Radio. You know, we try to keep it up and keep it real every time we get online. And every time we talk, we're trying to talk about the issues that you bring aware to us, the diaspora of a new nation and the foundation of a great and mighty nation has always started with the Father. And every time we work on that mission, we're not just fixing one aspect, but we're fixing the whole aspect. Never to take away from a strong woman raising a child, but if the father diaspora or concept is always integrated into the household, we have a stronger child, a stronger family, and a family bloodline that we can all be proud of. So this is your brother. This is my, that's my brother, brother in the back. He's chilling right now, getting ready for his show Thursday and Saturday, and we moving on. Oh, we have a new show coming up on the midnight hour, okay? Now, you know, me, I'm a Soul Train baby. I don't know about you, but I used to love going down to the midnight train, you know what I mean? and get real busy with it almost. So, you know, I definitely feeling that right there. So we're going to be having the Midnight Oil coming on from 10 to 11:30 every Monday and Wednesday. Okay, so we come on live with King Calm. The man's going to calm the storm. So I want you all to tune in every Monday and Wednesday, starting on the 31st, where it'll be the first live broadcast. Your brother Alpha will be in the booth helping the brother out, and we'll be out there so showing our support. So everybody, tune in. Get in. Get on. And keep it grooving now, because it's about to hit it up. All right, so I just lay like this. One thing I always say, I may fall down, but I always get back up. This is your brother Alfred, and Brother Coop in the back. So we'll see you next week. Peace.